The Electric Light Orchestra, also iconically known as ELO, combined violins, cellos, string basses, horns, and woodwinds to give their rock music a unique classical sound, and was one of the greatest bands of all time. Buckle on up as you are about to hear from the founder of a band touring the world now as the American ELO.
Welcome to the Motivation Show podcast, and get ready to be inspired, motivated, and achieve massive success. And now, your host, the mayor of motivation, Eli Marcus.
Our guest today is a founder of the band Evil Woman, the American ELO. And as you guys know, the Electric Light Orchestra was known around the world as the premier orchestral rock and roll band, who pumped out many great hits in the good old days of the 1970s, like Strange Magic, Can't Get It Out of My Head, and Evil Woman. Welcome to the Motivation Show, Nigel Holland.
How you doing?
Oh, I can tell you I am doing fantastic, because I'm excited that you're coming my way in Broward, Fort Lauderdale, and you're going to be giving a concert.
Yeah, it's going to be Saturday, the 23rd of March, and we're really looking forward to it. We've played in Fort Lauderdale a couple of times, the Broward Center. Now we moved up to the Parker Playhouse because we've been doing well, so that we're selling more and more tickets, so they moved us to a bigger venue.
Well, I can tell you, that's one of the most beautiful complexes in the world, and I'm a guy that comes from New York City, so I've been Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, but Broward Center, you know, pretty impressive as well. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you a question. You know, you are called the American ELO. Can you elaborate exactly on what that means?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, as you know, since the last 5 or 6 years, tribute acts have kind of evolved and been taken over. And one of the biggest ones of all time was a band called Australian Pink Floyd. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
I have, yes.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And the thing about tribute bands, they're hit or miss. Some of them are like, eh, and some of them are really, really great, like Australian Pink Floyd. And usually there's one band in each category that's just phenomenal. You know, you got there's a Queen band that's really good, there's a Journey band that's really good, and Australian Pink Floyd was, when we started this whole project 7 years ago, that's who we really modeled this whole thing after. Because they did it right. They didn't cut any corners. They had the attention to detail was just what it needs to be. If you're going to do this, we said, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right, and we want to make sure that, you know, it would be disrespectful or, you know, sacrilegious to try to recreate this art form of the Electric Light Orchestra without paying attention to all the minute details. And so we modeled this band after Australian Pink Floyd, and that's why we call ourselves Evil Woman, the American ELO.
So I do plan on coming out to your concert, because I'm not that far away from you, so I'm going to be there. So what should I expect, and what should the rest of the audience expect from your concert?
Well, what you should expect is, and I said, we don't like to call ourselves a tribute act, because there's a stigma to that, you know?
Yes,
and,
true.
And I don't want to be disrespectful to the bands that are out there doing it. They're all working hard, trying to make a living, but most of them are just not that great. You know, they're okay. They're all good. But this show is really, really good. I'm telling you, we put a lot of work into this thing. And like I said, we said, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. All the vocal harmonies, all the string lines, they are exact the original. And we don't even call it a tribute act. We call it a multimedia concert celebration of the Electric Light Orchestra. It's more than a tribute band. We have video content for each song. We have an elaborate light show. We have a live string section, for crying out loud. Who does that? It's expensive. It's cost me a fortune the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, we've been losing money for years and years, but now we're finally starting to make money, because people are starting to, you know, catch on to how good this show is. And if you see the reviews and if you see the comments on social media, this is one of the best acts in the world right now. We feel like we're the best kept secret in America, and we're really proud of the show. And it's just, people are basically blown away by how good the show is compared to most tribute acts, you know?
Well, you know, when I think of Electric Light Orchestra, I think of complicated orchestrations. You know, you just can't like go in there and like you can just like copy another singer, another act. I mean, this is like really complicated stuff. So either you ace it, or you don't do it, right?
Oh, yeah. So, and that's the beauty of it. We don't really have a lot of competition. You know, there's 100 Beatles bands, there's 100 Rolling Stones bands, Foreigner, Journey, Kansas, you know, Fleetwood Mac. There's very, very few Electric Light Orchestra tribute acts out there. There's one or two that are pretty good, but the other two or three, that there's only maybe five that I've been able to find in the whole world. And most of them are not putting the work in. They're not, they don't have the attention to detail. They're trying to play string lines on keyboards. They don't bring, there might be one violin or a violin and a cello. We bring sometimes 12 strings.
Wow.
You know, our typical string section is violin one, violin two, viola, and cello. Now, the original ELO only had a violin and two cellos. But when I started putting the arrangements together, we decided to add the viola and make it a four-part string section, because there's certain songs, if you're familiar with the material, a song like Living Thing, that solo, it's got to be played on viola. It's really hard to play on a violin. And I'm getting into technical stuff, it's going to bore a lot of people. But when I put the thing together, we decided to go with four strings. And then what we do is we do groups of those four. So if it's a bigger budget, we'll go with eight strings or 12 or 16 strings. But it's always violin one, violin two, viola, cello, and then a second set or a third set. And honestly, it doesn't sound very much different when you add 8 or 12 or 16 strings, but it looks amazing because you got this glorious, it's very elegant. It's like going to the opera, or it just can't explain it. It's more visual, honestly, than sound. It does sound better and fuller, but it's, the difference is more in the optics. It just looks great when everyone's bowing together. It's such a, I mean, most bands don't have strings, and people don't get to see this very often. So it's very refreshing, and people seem to be really enjoying it. And it's really making us happy because you put a lot of work. I'm telling you, I spent over a year working on these string parts, and I'm really proud of them because the people, you know, we to save money, we have two people that travel with us for the most part, or a string orchestra leader. And then we hire local string players to save money because, why, you know, we're going all over the country. It saves on hotel and airplane tickets. So we hire local string players, and usually we get some of the best players in the country because, you know, they're playing with the local symphony orchestras and whatnot. And I've had on a consistent basis, they marvel at these charts and how well written they are and how all the bowings are correct. And that's really what I'm talking about when I say attention to detail. You know, this, you can't pull this stuff off if you don't get it right. And we're really proud of the show. We really will feel like we did a great job. And we just wish more people would come out to the shows. We're starting to sell out. We have about 8 shows this next month, and 3 of them are already sold out. The others are close. We're having trouble selling tickets in Fort Lauderdale for some reason. I don't know why.
You know, ELO is a 1970s band. So old guys like me, you know, I know them. I actually worked in Madison Square Gardens. I saw all the great bands. I saw ELO. But the one thing that actually fascinated me about what you said, and you're so spot on, is it's a visual thing, because there are many bands you can kind of close your eyes and you'll be fine, you know. But yeah. ELO was always very visual. So I'm very, very fascinated to see how you take that to your own level.
Yeah, well, we're not 40-something
years later.
we don't have a spaceship yet. We're working on that. But with the videos, we put a lot of time. There's a unique video for each song, and some of them are really meticulous. I remember I spent probably 5 or 6 weeks on the video for All Over the World, and there's a video of a song called Jungle. There's a song called Jungle that's on the Out of the Blue album. It's a song that most people don't know, but we wanted to throw in almost an obscure song for the real true diehard ELO fan. And it's a song called Jungle. And that video is a lot of work. A lot of editing went to that. But the video aspect of the show is something that most bands don't have. The light show is great. It's not where it's going to be a year from now. We're slowly building even better, but it's still amazing, you know? And hopefully in a year or two, we'll have a spaceship.
Why not? What actually happened to the Electric Light Orchestra?
Okay, from what I know, because when I started to put this thing together back in, we literally put this together in the end of 2014, 2015 is when we shot the first 4 videos that I made. When I started this, I didn't want to, you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to work. So we did 4 songs rather than take 25 songs and spend a year learning them and getting them right. We took 4 songs and we got them perfect. And then we just, you know, did the videos. But it was in 2014 when I started to put this together, and I actually contacted a guy named Lewis Clark, who's the original string arranger for all the ELO songs. He was an older man. He's passed away since. And I'm actually wearing a T-shirt of Lewis Clark.
Yeah.
That's what that is. So a guy gave me this at a show in Cleveland, Ohio, a couple of months ago. Somebody came up. He was a big fan, and he said he loved the show. And he took the shirt off his back and said, here, you have to have this shirt. This is a Lewis Clark T-shirt. But I contacted him in 2014, and I wanted to purchase the string charts from him because that was a lot of work. I knew I could do it. I have the background to do it, but I just didn't feel like spending 6 months writing out all these parts. I offered to buy the charts from him. I offered him $30,000 to buy the charts, and he wouldn't sell them to me. I'm like, come on, man, what's the difference? You're going to make me write these things out? And yeah, he would not sell me the charts. But what happened was ELO, there was some falling out, and half the members went with a band called The Orchestra, and the other half went with a band called Jeff Lynne's ELO. Now, the difference in those two bands as they evolved is Jeff Lynne's ELO is still playing, and they played last year. They played in, they did, I think, about 20 shows throughout the United States, and they were grossing $1 million a night. Okay. They sold out Madison Square Garden two nights in a row, I believe. Okay. I don't know if it was two nights, but I know that they were getting $1 million a night. The orchestra, they make this right around the same money we're making. They're not making, they're just not as good as Jeff Lynne's ELO. I'm sorry for the guys.
Interesting. The 50% of them are the pro, the other 50% for whatever reason didn't come
across. Yeah, and Lewis Clark went with the orchestra. Now he's passed away since he passed away a few years ago.
Yeah.
But the orchestra's still good, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's just they are guys that played in the Electric Light Orchestra, but they don't have Jeff Lynne. And Jeff Lynne, and you know, that's the 90% of it. You know, if you don't have the guy singing all the songs, it's, it's not the same, you know?
Yeah, kind of hard to have the Beatles without Paul McCartney or John Lennon, get it, or even George Harrison.
I remember one time a friend of mine was in a bar in Detroit, and Neil Schoen, the guitar player from Journey, was there with a band, and he goes, "Hey, I'm here, and Neil Schoen's here with a band, and there's like nine people in the bar." This proves, because we always argued about this, unless you got the lead singer, unless Steve Perry's there, unless David Lee Roth is there, unless nobody cares about the bass player from the Babies, you know, they want to know that they want to see the lead singer, you know, and that's why Jeff Lynne's the ELO is inherently going to be better. They got the main guy, you know.
So of all the hundreds of bands out there that you could have been the American sort of representative of, now you take one of the most complicated bands probably in history, one of the most fascinating bands and one of the great bands. So what attracted you most to them?
Well, I was always a big Beatles fan and growing, and ELO when later when I was in high school, whatever. But if you analyze the Electric Light Orchestra songs, they sound very complex, but actually they're not super complex. They're really basically Beatlesque kind of pop tunes with orchestral arrangements and really, really plush harmonies. The songs are not that elaborate. They are. Don't get me wrong. They're not like simple songs, but they're not like I'm trying to think, you know, that progressive rock, like the Canadian band, whatever. I'm losing my train of thought here. But yeah, they're not like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer kind of crazy. They're not
like a Bohemian Rhapsody or something
that. Yeah, no, but they're basically little cute little pop songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff Lynne said this in interviews, but they're basically Beatles songs with orchestral classical bits and really elaborate harmonies. And what he does is very clever. He changes the arrangements as you go through the songs. If you analyze them, and which I had to do, that's the only way I was able to get this show to be that good. I had to dissect every song and go through them and realize what's happening. He'll do simple little changes in each chorus. Like a simple song like Don't Bring Me Down, for example. It sounds like it is basically a 1-4-5. But the choruses, if you listen to him, he changes the harmony structure every time around. It gets more and more elaborate. And then in one of the last, you know, it just, that's where the detail is. And there's subtle differences in timing and phrasing. And then a song like Sweet Talking Woman, same thing. That was honestly the hardest song for us to get down, was Sweet Talking Woman, because the form of the song doesn't make sense. It isn't verse, chorus. You know, this verse is longer. This verse, this pre-chorus is an extra bar of two out of nowhere. A song like Confusion, out of nowhere, there's a bar of two. Well, where did that come from? But it keeps it from being monotonous and boring, okay? So in Do Ya, for example, out of nowhere, and after they get, you know, the bridge, which is a beautiful bridge section with the strings playing, and in the country when it's out, you lay down to rest in the morning. So after that, it comes out with a chorus, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like a marching band with an airplane going by. I'm like, what the hell is that? Out of nowhere? But what it does is it breaks up the monotony of what would normally be a pretty simple song, but it doesn't come across as simple because these elaborate string arrangements and these harmonies, and he's changing the structure around to distract you from how simple the song really is. It's genius. It's absolute genius.
Well, your passion comes across. I mean, your energy is amazing. You know, you're electric in yourself. So besides the Beatles, you know, were there any other, you feel, influences along the way?
Yeah, well, they are, but they were not ELO kind of influence. My favorite band when I was growing up was a band from the UK called Squeeze. I don't know if you're familiar with Squeeze.
Okay.
But I was always a big fan of them. They were big in the 80s when I was in high school. I went to college in the early 80s, and they were big, and they would come over. And I lived in New York, actually. I grew up in Long Island,
Oh, and, interesting.
I saw them at Madison Square Garden. I saw them at the Long Island Coliseum a couple times, and they were the band that I really liked. I just love the songwriting. They're, again, very Beatlesque. You know, Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook, very, very clever songwriting. But that band was actually almost too clever for its own good because the songs were not commercial enough. They were really, really musician-type songs and really clever lyrically and whatever and catchy, but they weren't very popular as like ELO was because the songs were not as palatable to the masses, if you will, you know? But Squeeze was always my favorite band. And, of course, the Beatles. That's above all. I was always a big Beatles fan. In fact, Jules Holland was the keyboard player from Squeeze. And that's where I kind of got my stage name, which is Nigel Holland. I got it from Jules Holland.
Yeah.
Squeeze, yeah.
You know what's fascinating to me? You know, when you look at the Beatles, right? You only had four people in the band, right? And so many bands today, they've got 10, 12, or whatever. How many are in your band? And how do you actually choose? Like, you can probably get away with one or two less, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about that process.
Well, here's the thing. Right into their main band is bass, drums, this three guitars, because the lead singer plays guitar as well. So it's three guitars and two keyboard players. Okay. Bass, drum, guitar, keyboard. And a female singer, because those harmonies are just too, that's more modeled after Jeff Lynne's ELO than it is the original ELO. Mm-hmm. There was no female singer in the ELO, but when I saw Jeff Lynne using a female to hit those harmonies, I figured it was okay. It wasn't against the rules. So we have a female. So that's the main eight in the band. And you really can't cut any corners on certain songs. You can, but you know, throughout the night, you just need them all, or you can't pull this off properly, you know? And then we have the string section, which is violin two, viola and cello. And that's the band every night. And on certain nights when the budget allows, or if it's a bigger stage or, you know, bigger show, we'll add four more strings or eight more or 12 more strings. And, you know, but the string section is at least four pieces, if not more, every night. So it's 12 on stage minimum, and a lot of times 16 or 20.
Well, you know, you've obviously had a lot of success, Nigel. So, you know, since my show is about motivation and success, is there like one or two key principles that you feel has contributed most to your success and you'd advise other people, whether it's in the music business or any other business, about?
Yeah. Don't get discouraged. Don't give up. No matter how many people tell you that, what are you wasting your time for? This is not going to work. Too bad. I'm going to do it. You know, I've had so many people here when I first started this, of guys I wanted to get involved with it. And they were like, who's going to watch it? I said, I'm telling you, this is going to work. I've had a lot of other success and other projects I did years ago. And I just knew the people were going to like, if it's done correctly, it's going to work. And a lot of people that I was surprised, they just, I don't see it. They would want to spend time being an Eagles band or a Rolling Stones band. And I'm like, this is a bunch of those. What do you want to do that for? This is hard. I didn't even know of any other electric light orchestra bands at the time. I'm like, why would you want to go into a field where there's 10 other people you got to compete with? We're the only game in town. We're going to, you know, give me time to put the show together and we're going to crush it. It's going to be amazing. You know? So I would say, don't get discouraged by all the naysayers or the haters, if you want to call them that, whatever the word is. Just keep going. If you follow your
beliefs.
Well, yeah, follow your beliefs, but work hard. Don't be lazy. Mm. It's not going to happen. This didn't happen overnight. It's been 7 years and we worked like crazy. We were just the other night at 3 a.m, reprogramming some lights. You know, I told you the light show is, in my opinion, isn't up to snuff with music. Musically, we're there. We you can't sound any better than we did. It really sounds great. I was really proud one night. A guy comes up to me. And we do two sets with an intermission usually. And the guy comes up to me in an intermission. Hey, Andy, I know what that thing is on your app. He said, hey, what song is this? And they tell you what song it is. Is it Spotify or something with an S? I don't know. And the guy says, three times throughout that set, I asked, who is this? And they told me it was ELO. That's how good you guys sound. You sound good. And I've even had Facebook and YouTube pull my videos down for copyright infringement. I had to actually send the multi-track recording to YouTube. I said, no, these are my recordings. This is not the original ELO. Because you're not allowed to do that. You can't just take their songs. All these things we recorded ourselves. I'm really good in the studio because of my, you know, attention to detail. I'm a lunatic when we go to the studio. We do something 80 times. I don't care. It's got to be right. I mean, either it's right or it's not, you know. So these recordings are that good. But the light show, it still has some work to do. So we were there two nights ago getting ready for the next bunch of shows and reprogramming some lights that were off a little and whatnot. But we put so much time into this thing. That's the difference. I really don't think these other bands do, you know. Maybe the Australian Pink Floyds and the Night of Queen. And there's a handful of them that obviously did because their shows are amazing. But most of these other bands, they learn their 20 songs and they get up there and they don't even have the harmonies right. They're singing the wrong words or they're playing parts wrong. It's like, God, what are you doing? I think it's disrespectful. I don't think it should be allowed, really.
I actually agree with that. Well, you actually gave a second success principle there, because, you know, even though you're really satisfied with the production that you're doing, you kind of still look to improve every day, whether it's 1% or whatever you can do to make it, as close to perfect as you possibly can. Of course, no such thing as perfection, but to be satisfied and still strive to be better, that is a great success principle.
it's the only way. You can always do better. That's the way it's got to. And plus, things we missed. We didn't realize, oh, wow, we thought we had it right. But look, oh, you know what? And again, like I said, most of it's in the lighting, because we really spent most of our time the first 5 years on the sound, the audio. And then we worked on getting the videos right. And we're about to add a few more songs. We were hoping to have them in by the time we go to Florida next couple of weeks, but they're probably going to have to wait till April or May. We're going to add Xanadu, and we're going to add, what's the other one? Sweet is the Night, 10538, and the other one, Fire on High. But they're just not ready yet, so we'll add them in a couple of weeks.
Well, you know, of course, Evil Woman is one of the most iconic songs in history. Even a shower singer like me, you used to sing Evil Woman, you know?
Yeah.
And so was it that snappy for you to say, okay, what's the name of our band? Let's go to the iconic song. Or how did that all come about?
That's a great question, because when we first started the band, evilwoman.com was not available. Okay, somebody else owned it. And we tried Mr. Blue Sky, there was a band called Strange Magic. You know, we went through all the titles of the songs you would think, right? Evil Woman, Mr. Blue Sky, Turn to Stone, whatever. None of them were available. So what we did, we actually, the name of the band for the first 3 years was actually A New World Record.
Oh, wow.
We had access to that domain. So if you look at the early videos, all over the, it says A New World Record.com, the drum logos, whatever. That's what we were called. And we hated it because no one knew what the hell we were. It's like, that's not, even though it's one of their biggest albums. There were a lot of hits off that album, Tightrope and Rock Aria. The thing is that no one knew what the heck it was. And we actually had guys introduce, and these are professional people that introduce. They're getting paid to introduce the band. That's their one job, right? And twice at two different shows, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for A New World Order. Like we're a bunch of Nazis or something. I'm like, no, what the? So we wanted to change the name so bad. And what happened was when the pandemic hit, the name Evil Woman became available because the guy didn't renew it or whatever. I don't know.
Oh.
So we came up with Evil Woman, the American ELO, and it just changed everything. It's such a much better marketing scheme. So we rebranded in 2019 to Evil Woman, the American ELO, and it's really made a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name I would go with if I could get it. Yeah. And you certainly did that. You know, I think about the... Going back to the Beatles again, you got those four iconic members of the band. And of course, they only were here 7 years when you really think about it, right? Look at all the music they put out in 7 years. And you got, honestly, not that I'm going to criticize any other bands, because some bands out there 50 years and they haven't even put out like 10% of what the Beatles has done. So I'm always curious, why is it that the early on, in your opinion, bands pump out all these hits, and then even though they're sticking around for 30 more years, all they're doing is just rehashing the same music. They rarely come out with like a new hit. What do you think?
You know, I never really thought about why they don't come out with new music, but I know that no one wants to hear their new music. I know.
Well, there's the biggie, right?
Yeah, because some of the guys are like, well, hey, you know what? Should we play some of the Traveling Wilburys songs? And I'm like, no, we're an ELO act. We're not going to play... there's some great songs, that they did with the Wilburys, but even though Jeff Lynne produced, but, people want to, people don't want to hear the latest, I don't know if the Rolling Stones put anything out in the last 5 years, but if they did, I don't think anybody would want to hear them. I went and saw Paul McCartney in Madison Square Garden the week before the pandemic hit. It was February 28th, and then that Valentine's Day, they shut the world down, but I was there watching McCartney, had great seats, and he played a couple of songs that he had released recently. And I had like, why are you even doing this? No one seemed to care. And then it went back to the hits and everyone went crazy. So even, Paul McCartney, who I revere, I don't know. I don't think people want to hear the new hits. It's very rare that they do well. I don't know why they were together every day. They worked like crazy. They were just in a rut. Maybe they didn't have any money, so they just kept working. And once they got rich, they started partying too much. I don't know. But you're right. After 7 years, but they all had great, successful solo careers, if you think about it, too. They kept going, too. They didn't just stop. And we're still listening to songs by Ringo and George and Paul and John that were written in the 80s. So in the 70s and 80s on their solo careers. But I don't know why. But you make a good point. It just seems like they get their 10, 20 hits and then they stop. You know, or the Beatles case, 100 hits and they stop, you know.
So, Nigel, going back again to the Beatles, right? Now, obviously, at some point, they just had some personality clashes. And I don't know even what the true story is. You know, we've heard a few stories of why they broke up, and every band seems to break up at some point. What's the secret to your band getting along?
Well, I think that the secret is that everybody kind of contributes in their own way. You know, everyone's got their own little roles to play, and everyone really cares about the product. We put so much work into this thing, and we really haven't had a ton of success until recently. And we're finally starting to really be proud. You know, we've always been proud of the show, but now we're starting to see the fruits of our labor, if you will. And it's not like they just show up and do the show. We're in there. Everyone's helping set up the equipment, making sure everything looks right, making sure everything is proper. You know, everyone's got their own little tasks. We do stuff like we have a meet and greet after each show. And I know a lot of people don't like doing it because it's exhausting, but we feel it's very important.
I love that. You know,
go out in front, yeah, shake hands and kiss babies and sign autographs. Yep. And you know, it's just part of, I don't know, a buddy of mine years ago told me this quote, and I really take it to it. It's, you're only going to have the privilege, and I use the word privilege, you're only going to have the privilege of being allowed to be on a stage for so many hours in your life. Think about it. Someday no one's going to want to look at your fat, bald head up there, you know? You need to cherish every minute that you're on a stage. And I've always felt that way. Yeah. And I played in other bands, and, you know, when I was in college and years ago, this guy's looking at their watch going, hey, we're supposed to stop. It's 1 o'clock. What do you mean? Give them an encore. These people are here. What are you going home for? If you don't want to do this, go sell insurance. Do something else. There's so many guys that can't get a gig. If you don't want to be here, don't be here, please. There's guys that will kill to be on stage. Are you out of your mind? So that's the thing. Just cherish every moment you're on stage and be happy that you're being allowed to be there. And if you go at it with that attitude, you're going to have a great time because that's what it's all about.
I love it because you're making it about the audience there and you're connecting with the audience, and very few bands do. They're kind of unapproachable, and here you are going out there and like, hey, come on, I'll say hello to you, you know.
Yeah, 20 minutes making it about themselves. It's kind of like, you know, hey, look how fast I can play guitar. Yeah, look what a great singer, how pretty. Who cares? I don't get a lot of philosophy lessons here, but my other philosophy is, it doesn't matter how good the band is. Most bands are there to sell beer, if you think about it, right? If you sell a lot of beer, you're the best band the guy ever hired. But if you're playing a party, and I've had a lot of parties, I've got to play all over the world with my other band, the Right On Band. We played some of the biggest parties you can ask about. And my whole philosophy is, it's about the crowd. They're there to have a good time. They don't care how good the drummer is or the trombone player. If they go there and they meet somebody and they go home and have the sexy time with their friend, you are the best band they ever had, right? That's what it's about. You're to entertain people. No one cares about you as a musician. I'm not trying to be discrediting musicians, but it's not about musicianship. It's about entertainment.
Exactly.
Me.
Yeah. People want to walk out feeling good.
You're supposed to be good. You're supposed to be able to play this stuff, right?
That should be a given, right?
Now let's make half the people have some fun. I mean, they could hire a DJ and save a lot of money. They don't need you.
By the way, that's what my favorite comedian, Don Rickles, used to say. What, do you want a cookie for it? So, Nigel, I have a lot of listeners who are going to be listening all over the United States. Some are going to be listening abroad. Where are you going to be in 2024? Which cities besides Broward? And tell us how people can learn more about you.
Okay. The website is theamericanelo.com. Theamericanelo.com. And, this Saturday, we're going to be in DeKalb, Illinois, at the Egyptian Theater. The week after that, we're down in Oxford, Alabama. And we're going to be in Florida at the end of the month. We're going to be at the Riley Center in Ocala. We're going to be at the Capitol Theater in Clearwater on the 22nd. We're going to be at the Parker Playhouse on the 23rd. And then, I don't have this written down, but I'm trying to do it from memory. In April, we've got a whole bunch of shows. We're going to be in Newton, North Carolina. We're going to be in... Okay. I know we're going to be at the Factory in St. Louis. That's on the 25th. And we're going to be at a whole bunch of places. I think the Genesee Theater in Wisconsin. And later in this year, we're going to be in the Chicago area again, because we're going to be in DeKalb in 2 days. In Chicago, we're going to be at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles, Illinois, on the 26th of August. And then we're going to, 26th of July and 27th of July, we're going to be at the Des Plaines Theater, which is just outside Chicago. That's in Des Plaines, Illinois. And then we're going to be on Long Island. We're going to be at the Suffolk Theater out in Riverhead on August 10th. I'm just trying to go from memory here. I'm sorry. I should have.
That's pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
That's a lot of gigs.
I haven't even mentioned half of them. We got a whole bunch more in Wisconsin and Minnesota, the Treasure Island Casino, you know, a whole bunch more. But if you go to the website, theamericanelo.com, you'll see the whole list of them all. There's probably about 40 shows that are on the books down, and they're booking more like crazy. We're really, people are starting to catch on. Like I said, for the last 2 years, we've been trying to, we had a lot of momentum, then the coronavirus kicked in and it kind of hurt everybody, not just us, you know. Things stopped getting booked. But now that things are getting back to normal, the word is getting out, because like I said, most people are getting acclimated to tribute acts. It's pretty much all you have right now. All the main acts are dying off, or they're not really playing as much. So, and tribute acts really haven't been that good for the last few years. But now there's a handful of acts that really are good, and people are buying tickets to their shows. It's really starting to, the whole industry is really starting to catch on. And since we're one of the better acts, people are starting to book us like crazy.
Nigel Holland of Evil Woman, I'm coming out to see you soon, Nigel. Yes, I can't wait. Thank you for your time today.
It's going to be Saturday night, the 23rd of March at the Parker Playhouse.
So I'll see you soon, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you would like to inquire about having Eli motivate your team, speak at your event, or coach you personally for massive success, email themotivationshow@gmail.com. That's themotivationshow@gmail.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.